You're listening to the Drummers Education Connection Podcast. Interviews with the greatest drummers in the business and roundtable discussions with industry leaders and teachers from around the globe to help provide performance, insight, and inspiration.
Bossa Nova to lighten your morning. Hey, everyone, welcome to the Drummers Education Connection. We're so excited to be here. We're so lucky to be here. My name is Jeremy Steinkohler. I'm here with my good friends, great drummers, great guys, Bart Robley from
California,
Chip Ritter, Tucson, Arizona.
Hello.
Here in the San Francisco Bay Area. I am, and we are missing our fourth friend, Rick Stojak. He's visiting his mom in Florida. We wish him the best. And miss him, and we'll be looking forward to seeing him next week. Incidentally, next week we are having Derek from BeatNote, who designed this fantastic, fantastic drum app, drum scoring app that you can use on your phone and tablet. So he's going to be our guest next week. We're going to talk all about that really cool app that we found out about at PASIC, and we're looking forward to having him on next week. But before we get started talking about today's topic, which is the importance of feedback, want to take a moment to acknowledge and shout out to our friends who have been suffering through the fires in Southern California. There are two guys who have been guests on the deck who are good friends of ours, very good friends of ours, who have lost everything. Their homes have burned down. They've lost all their gear. They've lost everything that wasn't in some remote studio place. And our hearts go out to them. We can't even imagine what that could be like to come home and have your home be completely gone. All your belongings, everything that you've collected, and all your personal mementos and all those things that matter to you. We're happy that they're safe, of course, they and their animals and their families, their spouses. But our hearts go out for them and what they're going through right now. And they have links to donate. And I've donated personally, and I know these guys have or are going to, and we encourage you to send some money their way too. Chip is putting the links in the chat right now for John Mader and Mike Packer. John has been on deck before and is a phenomenal drummer, a good friend of mine here originally from the Bay Area, moved to Southern California. He's been the drummer in the Hamilton production for several years. He played in all the big shows that came through San Francisco, Wicked and Rent and Mamma Mia and Lion King. And he's toured with John Fogerty, and he plays with the Carl Verheyen band, the guitar player from Supertramp. And he's played with all sorts of heavy musicians. It's a really wonderful guy. And please consider donating to his relief fund. And then also Michael Packer, who's a terrific drummer and educator. He's on the PASIC drum set committee, really, really smart guy, terrific, terrific member of the drumming community, played with the band, now I'm forgetting the name of it, the Something Dogs. Do you guys remember?
I don't. I remember when he was on the show and hanging out with him at PASIC. I don't remember the name.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, so he was a drummer in a
Tijuana Dogs.
Thank you. Tijuana Dogs. And also has contributed some great educational materials on Hudson Music that are technical, worked with Ralph Humphrey for many years. Our hearts go out to John and Mike and their wives and our friends down there who've been impacted by this. And we hope everyone's staying safe down there. And if you consider donating to their GoFundMe campaigns, a little bit from us, who still have all our stuff, goes a long way to them who've lost everything. They've lost everything. So
yes, yeah. You can hit the links in the chat on Facebook right now.
Yeah. All right.
Fantastic.
So happy new year again to everybody. We're happy to be back here on deck. And today we're going to talk about the importance of feedback. And I'm not talking about the kind when the singer gets too close to the mic.
We're talking about a Fender Stratocaster shoved into a Marshall stack, just like Jimi Hendrix used to.
It's so important.
That kicks ass.
Yeah.
That kicks ass. Feedback, and it is important.
Feedback you get, boy, it comes in all kinds of ways, sometimes unexpected. And you want to be open to it. You want to be considering if you live in your own mind you know, you can only get so far, right? Mm-hmm. I learned that one the hard way sometimes. But even on a practical level, like, you need feedback when you're practicing. You need a metronome. How do you know if you're steady without a metronome, right? How do you know if you're playing the part as well as you can without advice from someone who can do it better?
Right.
Right. Just taking lessons from a teacher. It's just invaluable. Someone said to me the other day, oh, you know, I imagine drum lessons are like, you know, golf lessons. You know, you can take one and then, you know, 6 months later you come back and take another one. And I thought, boy, I don't think that's the way it works at all. That doesn't make any kind of sense to me. Like,
they must be a great golfer.
Yeah, exactly. He's a great golfer. You know, you need that constant feedback all the time. There's so many aspects. Playing is such a complex thing, and there's so much to learn about it to do it well. Constant feedback is important. So we'll kick it off. And Fred, hey, welcome, Fred. We'd love to hear from you on this if you have something to say. Let's start with for you guys personally, feedback that you've received that's been memorable, valuable, pivotal, life-changing, whatever.
I think, you know, working what you said with a metronome is so important. And I think it's really easy when somebody in a band situation that you're working with says something about your time. Oh, you're rushing, or you're dragging, or you're this, or you're that. It's really easy to take that personal. And I think working with a metronome, as you said, and I jump in with that because I can't stress how important I think that is. Because even when you work with a metronome, there's a difference between playing to the metronome and playing with a metronome. And I learned that when I was working with Michael Blum. I went into the studio to do an album, just knowing I was ready to cut this album. And in halfway through the first song, you know, and he never stops a recording. He stopped the recording. He said, please listen to the metronome. You're creating an uncomfortable energy in the booth. And I was like, you know, it's like, oh, well, I had two choices. I could either let the ego get the best of me, or I could take that piece of advice and swallow it down and really listen to the metronome and really listen to the click and let the click guide me. I think too often the metronome we use it crushes our ego. Oh, I can't play with it. I suck. Or I can't play X amount of passage. I can't play this thing that's on my music stand, whatever it is, at that tempo, so I'm not good. No, the metronome is a carrot and a stick. The metronome is a thing to judge your progress by.
Right.
And it's also a tool to help you stay in time when you absolutely have to stay in time. And so I think that instant feedback that you get from the metronome, okay, and then staying with it in your mind, not just, okay, I'm playing with the metronome and it's this annoying sound over here, really being focused on it, really being present with the click, and yet still providing a feel for the group is so important. And then when you realize that somebody else can hear the metronome and they're hearing what you're hearing and you're not syncing with it, take that piece of advice, you know, and run with it.
I like, you had a lot in there, Bart, a lot of good stuff.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't mean to unravel on you, but.
No, not at all. This is what we're here for, the unraveling. What is the skill that a person needs to have to play well with a metronome?
I think
it's a short answer. What do you need to do to be able to play well with a metronome? Where do you need to focus your attention?
I focus my attention on obviously lining up the quarter notes, but then also I just try to treat the metronome as if it's like the best musician I've ever played with.
Right. But what do you do? You're of course all you're saying is true. But what are you doing when you're playing with a metronome? What makes a metronome useless if you don't do this one thing?
Paying attention to it while you're paying attention to what you're doing.
Listening. right?
Listening.
Okay. Yeah, of course. I know, you know, it's a simple answer. Like, it's the same thing. You feedback. You have to listen to get the feedback. You have to listen from the metronome. You have to listen to get the feedback from the other musicians.
Correct.
Right. And it comes down to almost like a humility or like a where you put your priorities. If you're thinking about what you're doing so much and you're totally in your head, you're not open to feedback. You're not open to feedback from the metronome. You're not open to feedback from drummers, from drum teachers even. I've had students come in who, you know, I tell them what's happening and they ignore it and they don't believe me. I'm like, are you kidding? What are you here for? Yeah. You know, I'm right.
I am right.
That's why I like hanging out with Jeremy, because that's always his answer.
And B, if I'm wrong, C letter A. You know, I said that to my son all the time. I'm like, you know, I was wrong. There was once, I think, you know.
I thought I was wrong, but it was a mistake.
No, but like, you know, that's like a stubbornness, you know. I mean, I'll tell you another quick one. There was a student in Bandworks who played in a band I was coaching, and, you know, her time would just go downhill. It would slow down every time. I was like, okay, you know, I'll try to frame, like, oh, we're slowing down. You know, you don't want to put the blame. And it just kept going. And I was like, okay, you're not really listening. You're not listening to the band. Because if you're listening to the band, you'd hear what I was hearing, which is that you're slowing down dramatically and the band is, you're coming apart. And she insisted that wasn't happening. I was like, you're not paying attention. You know, you're not listening. And so that's the first starters. You got to be open to feedback, you know, sonically and otherwise. And it doesn't mean that you take everything that anybody says about your playing as the truth. But, you know, if it's somebody whose opinion you respect, or who's got more experience than you, you might want to try it on for size.
One of the things that I've found that, you know, and there's a whole lot of things that we can, past episodes that we could weave into this. But one of the things that I've found over the years is that, you know, when you're working, whether it be with a student or sometimes you're working with other musicians, and they'll say they're not arguing, right?
Yeah, right, right.
I'm not arguing.
Yes, you are.
But right, but you give them an answer, right? You give them some feedback. Hey, I'm kind of hearing this and feeling this, or maybe we should try this. However, whatever you're going to say, you want to word it, and their answer always starts with either yeah, but, or yeah, no, but. There's always this thing, and then a but. Mm-hmm. Or the other one that I absolutely, you know, hate is, well, yes and no. You know, it's like not everything has to be an argument. You know, I mean,
yes, it does.
Yeah, right. It does. We got to argue all
the time. No, it doesn't. Yes, it does. No, it doesn't.
You know, and I think that, I think too often, And when I say this, man, I'm not pointing a finger because I got three pointing back at me. I think it's really easy because our instrument is so personal to us. And I'm saying our instrument is drummers, but I don't care if you're a drummer or a guitar player or what your main instrument is. It's a personal thing that you've honed your craft and you've worked at it. So it's really easy to take it personal. And when people gotta leave the ego at the door, hey man, that in and of itself is way easier said than done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but because so important.
That's how you grow. You know, yep. If everything's always easy for you, you're not growing. You're not challenging yourself, right? You want to seek out those experiences where you stand to learn something and improve in a meaningful way.
We have this one song. And right now I'm just speaking from an experience with the group that I play with, and not the guitar player we had now, but previously, the top of the song, okay, it's 16th notes, and they're kind of broken on 3, 4, and the song starts. That's how the song starts. One, two, three, four. Right? And it's, and that's the feel. And then it builds this huge climactic thing, and then it breaks back down. It's like bookended. It's a brilliant piece of music. And anyway, the guitar is, and the hi-hat, one and a two and a three and a four and a one and a two and a three and a four. And it's got to be tight. It's got to be there. And the guitar player previous, I you know, something was said to him. His answer was always this: I am dead nuts on.
So, oh, yeah, yeah, right, right, right.
Well, dude, I'm hearing a metronome, and then I'm playing to the metronome, and right. then I feel you, right. like, pulling me everywhere, and I'm trying to hold on to the metronome. You're not even listening to what I'm doing, but yet you're right.
Right, yeah.
That's maybe the metronome was speeding up and slowing yeah, down. You know,
well, they do that. They do that. You know, you have to buy a really expensive one for the ones that stay steady.
Yeah. You've got to get, you know what? Yeah. You don't want to download a free app. You need an expensive
metronome. Right, right.
Right.
Hey, there's a couple of great comments we had. Yeah. I want to highlight those. Fred says he was in a session in LA years ago and got into trouble because he couldn't stay with the metronome. And the engineer pulled him aside, said, "Do you want to be a drummer that makes money or makes a lot of money?" And that was an easy answer. And he said, to do that, get good with the click, be friends with it. Fred took that advice seriously, and he worked with a metronome, and now he gets hired all the time because he can play with a click and keep a good feel.
Yeah.
Makes perfect sense, man. I mean, it's such an easy thing. You know, people come in sometimes to lessons for me, and they're like, oh, I need to work on, you know, I want to work on my time. You know, or my bandmates say I'm speeding up all the time. I was like, okay, well, you know, how much do you practice with a metronome? And, you know, always the answer is none. It's like, okay, well, that's part of why you're speeding up, right? Because you haven't calibrated that internal clock to know what steady feels like. And I'll tell you this too. I have people who can be really good and steady at a certain tempo. And then you change the tempo and they get less consistent, right? So they can be...
And I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I call that the tempo trap. I tell that to my students because I think that each one of us feels, and when I say each one of us, everybody feels comfortable doing something at a certain tempo.
Yeah, I refer to that as the comfort zone. Like,
yeah, exactly. Yeah,
whatever. Yeah. Zone. Mm-hmm. Many people, you know, my students, if they sit down at the drums and I just ask them to play something, each student will play at their same speed and same volume pretty much all the time.
Yeah.
And that's just where you're used to playing. And if that's all you do, you know, that's where you're comfortable. When you start with a tempo or a dynamic balance, let's say that's different, you kind of want to get back to where you're comfortable. And so subconsciously or instinctively, you speed up to where you like to sit, or you slow down to where you like to be. And so that's why it's so important to break out of that and always be practicing at a range of tempos and a range of dynamics. James said something really interesting that I want to highlight. James Harrison, my approach to giving feedback differs based on the level and age of a student.
Yeah. Now,
I think we would all sort of agree with that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Well,
I had a student one time, and you know how you guys we've all been teaching long enough that you're in tune with your student and you can kind of tell where they're going emotionally, like if they're really struggling with something. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's really easy to get, as the teacher, okay, one more time and you've got this. Okay, you know what? Do it again. You've got this. Just one more time. And you're kind of like pushing up over the top of the hill. And I have to be aware of that for myself personally, because it's easy to focus on the part and not the person.
Right.
If that makes sense, you know?
Yes.
And so one time I had this kid and I was really in tune with him because he had been taking lessons for quite some time. And I just didn't see this coming. He's playing with the metronome and he's kind of, you know, he's not nailing it, but he's with it. But you can tell he's kind of like, he wants to take off. And this is a young kid. He's 10 at the time. He takes the sticks and he throws them across the room. And he looks at me And I'm not kidding you. He wasn't crying, nothing. He just looks at me and goes, that fucking thing is slowing down. And I'm like, whoa. Straight up, no chaser, kid. I'm like, yeah. Just chill out. And now I'm trying not to crack up. You know?
That's, you're using one of those cheap metronomes.
Oh, dude. What do you say to that? First of all, you want to give the kid a high five. Way to go. But the other one is like, hey, man, just chill out. But yeah, the thought process that James thing was like, yeah, sometimes you have to, you know, with something like that, you've got to kind of curtail your feedback or however you want.
You make a really good point there. You kind of hit the nail on the head, Bart. You said, you know, you got to remember that you're teaching the student and not the material.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. And everybody learns differently, right? Some people have different strengths and different weaknesses. Some people are quick on the uptake. Some people, it takes explaining it four different ways. And finally, the fourth way hits and they finally understand, right? Some people are able to pick things up really quickly. Other people have to take it home and work on it. You know, I have some students who want every piece of criticism I can offer, constructive criticism, right? They're like, no, don't hold back, Jeremy. This is what I'm here for. I want everything you can tell me about how I can possibly do better at what I'm doing.
Right.
And I had a student yesterday who I was asking him to try something and he couldn't do it on the first try. He's like, I don't want to do it. I was like, well, why not? Yeah. Because I'm embarrassed that I can't do it and I want to take it home and practice it. I was like, okay, well, you know, I pushed him a little bit. We tried it a couple of times, but you know, I can't give him the same kind of feedback that I do the other student who's wanting everything. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
As a teacher, this isn't maybe a feedback, but it's a question more than anything. You have that happen, right? Oh, I want to take it home and I want to practice it and come back and play it. Mm-hmm. Do you kind of take that and go, well, you know, let's try it anyway, because in a real world scenario, if you're asked to at least try something, you want to be comfortable with going out on a limb. Like for instance, you're in a recording session or on an audition. And gosh, I don't quite know that feel. And they pulled it out of the hat to play it. So, okay, I'll try it. Do you kind of want to push the student and give that feedback? Give that, hey, look, you might be put in this position where you have to just try something and push them in the lesson. Would you do that?
Not for that reason. The reason that I would push him, like yesterday, I pushed him to do it, what we were working on, it was because I wanted him to go through the process in front of me so that I could offer him some insight about how to do it better, right. About how his process was working. Right. And, right. It wasn't so much, oh, you know, someday you're going to be in a situation on stage or in an audition, you know, I mean, this was a 15-year-old kid, right. 14. And you know, I also reminded him, like, hey, I totally understand you feel embarrassed. Like, you feel like you should be able to do this thing I'm asking you to do, but it's challenging. I was like, but, you know, this is why you're here. This is what you're here for, is for me to help you and to learn, right? And so you're not supposed to come in here and perform every time. You know, I'm not here to judge. I'm here to help.
Exactly.
So that was the conversation we had. And, you know, he did it for 5 minutes. And I said, okay, that's enough. You know, good job. Good effort. And now take it home and practice some more.
You know, I think that that's a really, what you just said right there, I'm not here to judge, I'm here to help you. And I think a lot of students, and I think, you know, put myself in that situation, you know, I've been playing forever and I'm a teacher and I'm a professional musician and I go take a lesson. Mm-hmm. There's that point where you kind of feel like, well, gosh, I should be able to play this. And now this person is judging me because I'm doing all these things, but I can't do this. It's easy to get that inside of your head, back into the imposter syndrome thing that we talk about.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that you said that. I think it's important to remember not to be judgmental as a teacher, and I think it's also important to remember as a student of the instrument to not judge yourself and realize that people aren't, that are in our position, aren't judging you.
Yeah, and remember, you know, as much as your ego feels like it's on the line, and I totally understand the desire to impress your teacher and to perform well for your teacher. I totally get that. Yep. But, you know, what you're there for is learning and learning.
Again, put the ego over here for a minute.
Yeah, right. And it's back to what we talked about the importance of feedback, right? Yep. Like, you can go do it on your own, but you're missing an opportunity to get feedback. You know, isn't it? I mean, I love it when I'm taking, you know, a golf lesson and I get the teacher fully there with me and like working on every little aspect and giving me every piece of feedback I can that's useful.
Right.
You know, I don't care about impressing. I care about learning.
Yeah, I think it's important for students to realize that nobody on the planet wants them to succeed more than their teacher does. Nobody's rooting for them more.
Right. And that's a good one, Chip. And I think that mm-hmm. underscores the importance of trust. Right. And that's something you have to build with your students so that they trust you, so that they believe that you have their best interest in mind always. Right. And I think as a good teacher who cares, you know, that's what you do. You build trust with your students so that they trust that you know your shit and they trust that you are trying there to help them. You know, I had one student come in, had been taking lessons with this guy for 6 months or so. And she said, you know, like 40 minutes out of 60 was the dude playing.
Mm.
And I was like, well, did you learn a lot from that? And she said, nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. I had a student one time that he came to me and this kid could play, and he was in marching band, and he was this kid that could see somebody do it and instantly just, oh, okay, yeah, I can do that. Even at top speeds, he could mimic somebody. He was incredibly good at it. And that's how he got himself into and through a big part of his marching band. And he went to drum lessons with a guy that he said every week, for like two years, every week the kid would come into his lesson, they'd sit down, and they'd put on Beat It.
Mm-hmm.
And, okay, play along with it. He'd play along with it. They'd do two or three times. He'd give him, okay, don't speed up. Don't slow down. Watch this. Make sure you catch that da-doom crash. Open the hi-hat right there. And then, okay, great, practice it. See you next week. That's all they did for years. And I said, well, what did you learn? And he said, I didn't learn anything. I just know that song, you know. And I'm like, okay, I hope so. And
he's probably
and
I go, you pretty didn't good at that song by now.
Oh, yeah. Dude, he kicks ass at it. But I said, you didn't learn anything else? And he said, no. He goes, it's literally all we did. And his dad corroborated that. He goes, it just got really frustrating, you know, to come in, because he wouldn't always come in and listen. He'd come in, why are you still working on that song? And so I said, well, okay, well, we're going to take in through some reading stuff. So, and he, because he's in marching band, I thought, well, we'll start in the Nard book. So we start going in the Nard book, and he couldn't read the solos. And so I had to really backstep and go into just simple subdivisions. Well, now the kid he's such an advanced player in mimicking somebody but he can't read. So it was frustrating for him. And And so I had to really watch my feedback. I couldn't say, well, I can't believe you can't, which I never would.
Right.
I wouldn't even say something like, well, at this point, you should be able to. You know, I couldn't do that because it would step on the kid's ego so much because he's such a great player. So I had to be careful how I gave those critiques to propel the student forward.
Right. Think about your goal when you're doing that. What are you trying to do? Are you trying to show someone that you know the things that they don't know and that they need things you know? Or are you trying to help them achieve, you know, learn and gain knowledge? Well, you know, you can there's a way to show somebody that they don't know something without making them feel stupid for not knowing.
Yeah. Right?
Say what you mean what you say, but don't say it mean.
Yeah.
Oh,
I there's like a good, you know, I had a, my interesting, I missed the first question. You guys kept going after the Jeremy.
Oh, sorry. Sorry, Chip.
No, it's okay. I'm loving the conversation. I'm a big fan. I love it. But, oh, by the way, my Eagles are my good thing. Go Eagles. Yeah.
Oh, we probably got two things today.
Oh. Yeah, we got all kinds of good things.
We forgot good things because we started off with bad things.
Yeah, right.
That's true.
You're right.
Well, good thing was that we put up some links in the chat to help Mike Packer and John.
I mean, hopefully people are going to go support those people.
Those are our good things.
Just for those of you who have tuned in late, these are two of our friends, good friends, who have been on deck, who have lost everything that they own in the fires in Southern California. So we put the links in the chat, and please consider making a donation to help them out. Sorry, Chip.
Please.
No, I was just going to say my first experience on feedback was my first drummer, Fred Hayes, who told me that I was slowing down on the hi-hat, rushing my fills, and speeding up on the ride. And I needed to work on that and, you know, and explain the metronome to me and what that device does and how important it was and how to kind of pay attention to that and what I was doing at the same time. And I think he did it in such a kind way that it didn't hurt my feelings at all. I was just like, oh, really? What? That's what you do now. And I think that's the mark of a good teacher is to not even get into that hurt zone. It's just to explain the truth and the reality and guide them on their path, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that that's what a good teacher should do is just what you just explained, Chip, is just guide them on their path. That was very well said. I think that's our job as teachers is to kind of, you know, take the student onto the path and let them go on it or take them to the door and here you open it and go in. I'll just guide you through the dark type of thing, you know? So that's cool. That's really cool.
Yeah, they have to do the digging, but we get to shine the light. You know what I mean? We get to help them with the direction and discovering where they want to go and help them get there. I also noticed about feedback, you know, when I got feedback as a professional drummer or some people comment on videos and whatever, some of them, when a comment about my playing makes me upset, there's usually a kernel of truth to it. It's not maybe, they may not be all the way true as far as comments on YouTube, but some of them that upset me, I usually end up, you know, after I calm down and cool out a little bit, sometimes there's a kernel of truth to that feedback. So just be aware of that.
Right. Right. Yeah. That's a good one because a lot of times the feedback stings. Right.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And that's okay. Like it's normal. It's okay to feel the sting. Feel it. Feel crappy. Feel like you're whatever. And then get over it and do the work.
Yeah. Well, I think I told this story. Matter of fact, last week when I studied with Greg Bissonette, I went to his house for my very first lesson with him, and I couldn't play what he told me to play, and it was really a hard lesson. And I went away from it like just defeated, and it took a bass player friend of mine to talk me through it to realize that well, that was a good lesson then.
Right.
And I was like, oh yeah. I guess it was, you know, and you kind of have to, you know, you have to take that sting. You have to take the sting because if you, as you said, as all of us have said, if you're not seeking to be, if you're just going to jam and just play along with somebody, you're not learning anything. You're there to learn and do things that you can't do.
Right. What if you went into a lesson and the teacher said, wow, you sound amazing. There's nothing I can teach you.
It's like working out with no weights. There's no resistance to what you're trying to do. There's no challenge, and then therefore there's no growth.
Right.
I took a lesson like that once, and it was a named drummer, very famous band, and he had written a book, and he put
piece.
No. And he had put...
Realistic Rock. That was my first book.
No matter what you say, I'm going to say no because I'm not going to say it. He, great drummer, really famous, super famous band, platinum records on the wall. We go in to the lesson, and basically, in a nutshell, he had a ghostwriter write his book, and it was a book for beginners, and he couldn't read it. He didn't know how to read music. He couldn't. He had no idea how to read his own book, and I ended up giving. Well, this is how you read it.
Oh,
and I still paid for the lesson.
Oh man,
I was so pissed.
No, don't say that person's name. Yeah, yeah.
I'm not gonna say his name. And when I say that, I mean it. I was really bummed because I was like, dude, I love your drumming, and I love your. Why would you put yourself in that position? you know, to do that. And but I don't know what that has to do with feedback other than maybe I gave him some feedback, but and I don't, you know, I mean, I sound like a jerk when I even say it, but it happened.
There are times when feedback is not helpful, right? I know this because my wife tells me all the time. Right. Sometimes the best thing you can do is listen.
But do what she says.
Yeah, right. But what I really am trying to get at here is that sometimes you can get feedback that puts you on the wrong path. You know, you can be told something that, you know, there's a great degree to which what we do is very subjective. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this comes back to that trust thing. Like, I trust your opinion musically, right? So I might say to a student, well, I think, you know, your hi-hat's too loud, you know, for this feel. And
drummers, have you ever worked with a guitar player who owns an extremely high-end acoustic guitar and they shove a pillow in the sound hole to dampen overtones? Of course not. So why would you do that to your kick drum? The Aquarian Super Kick line of bass drum heads is an industry bestseller and a favorite among drummers, drum techs, and recording engineers who want a musical controlled bass drum sound without the use of blankets, pillows, or external muffling. The patented floating muffling system uses a narrow band of acoustic felt for a pre-dampened yet natural sound, eliminating unwanted high-end frequencies and boosting low-end punch. Often imitated but never duplicated, the Aquarian Super Kick delivers superior tone control without all the extra work.
And I'd say, look, you can disagree with me, but, you know, if we go back to what I said in the beginning, I'm always right. But you know, I'm kidding. Sometimes it comes down to taste. And I'll say that, look, this is a subjective thing. For my taste, I'm feeling it this way. I'm hearing it this way. But, you know, you might have a different opinion about it. And that's fine. That's valid. And I want you to learn to trust your opinions and believe in the validity of your own feelings about how the music feels and what it should sound like. But there's definitely times when you can get some feedback that is like, I don't know how to say it, like, it's just wrong, you know, or it's like, boy, that's someone's opinion whose opinion is, you know, not worth that much. I had a student once who's a really good drummer, jazz player, 16, 17, high school jazz band, terrific player, working on these difficult Art Blakey transcriptions, whatever it was. And the biggest challenge he faced was that he just played too quiet. Especially when he's playing in the big band, he wasn't driving the band hard enough because we watch videos and listen to recordings. I went and saw him play. And I said, yeah, man, you sound great. I just wish I could hear more of what you were doing, right? I understand you don't want to be too loud, but I think you're taking that too much of that prescription, worried about being loud. And he went, they went, played at some festival and adjudicated festival. And one of the pieces, if he came back and I said, how'd it go? Did you get any specific feedback to your playing? He said, yeah, the only piece of feedback I got was that I was playing too loud. And I was like, oh my God, that's like the worst thing anybody could have told you. Yeah. You know?
And you know what? Hey, look, I hold no bones about it. I'm a rock pig on pizza. My heart beats on 2 and 4.
Have you guys ever gotten any bad advice, bad feedback?
Well, I have, but I have the opposite because I beat them like they owe me money, you know, and I play with technique and stuff, but I like to lay into the drums. And so I get the opposite. That's too loud. And sometimes it is, look, dude, this is what I do, you know? So it is a subjective thing. It really is a subjective thing.
I got some bad feedback from a super famous drummer from a super famous band one time that I got to meet, and he kind of tore me up a little bit. He looked at my business card and he was like, "All right, first off, you need to take all those sponsored company logos off your card. This is just, it's trashy. It's tacky. You need to take those logos off." And the next thing is, you know, the juggling thing. You need to stop juggling because you're going to be known as the juggling guy and nobody's going to hire the juggling guy. And that's basically, you know, his advice to me. And I went home crushed. I was depressed. And my friend Jeff Wilson, who was my manager at the time, he told me, "Okay, first off, we're going to get one of those accordion cards and get every company we can get on the card. And then every chance you get to juggle, I want you to juggle. Every chance, even during a rock ballad, I want you to juggle, because you know what? The best thing that happened for you is to become the juggling drummer guy. You know what I mean?
Hell yeah.
And it was interesting though. Sometimes the person that's giving you that feedback isn't really trying to help you, you know?
Right. Yeah. Completely. I think that's right. That's why it's so important to trust the person who you're getting it from.
Yeah. Trust your drum teacher.
Sometimes it's unsolicited, you know, and that's part of why it you really got to be careful with the unsolicited feedback, or let's say critic reviews, right?
Reviews.
Yeah. That's a slippery slope, because it's great to feel validated by someone saying you're good, and it's crushing to feel devastated by someone saying you're not good. But you know, the advice I try to live by and also espouse is to sort of try to accept all that stuff without getting too wrapped up about it, you know, with a degree of equanimity, and just be like, "That's great. That's nice. Thank you for the compliment." And
yeah,
thank you for your criticism. You know,
that's good advice.
I wonder if there's anything in there that could be of value to me.
That's good advice, Jeremy. Search for the truth. If there's a nugget of truth or some kind of valid comment in there that you think can help you become a better musician, then by all means, investigate it. But if it's not, then just leave well enough alone and say, "Thank you for sharing." You know.
Right, right.
We've all run into those people, too, that like, when I walk away from a gig or a rehearsal or whatever with a group, I always want the feedback, like, "Hey, watch your time here," or you know, "You were dragging there," or "Jerry, you're, you know, close that hi-hat, don't be so heavy on the hi-hat." Whatever the feedback is, I want it, because I want to create a good pocket for the band to play in, and after all, I'm creating a pocket for the story. And far be it from me to want to step on the story, mm-hmm. right? So I really want to, I always want to lead with my best foot forward, you know? We have had, I'm sure all of us, the person that will come to you after a gig, immediately after the gig, "That was great, but I heard a few mistakes," and I, you know, and they've usually had a few. And you're like, you know, "I appreciate that." And then just walk away. But sometimes you can't walk away, and they follow you. And that how do you deal with that? Have you ever run into that? And how do you deal with that? An inebriated advice giver.
I have had an inebriated advice giver, but not anyone who is ripping me apart personally.
How come all of them never eat breath mints?
Actually, you know what? It's funny you say that, because that's what I use a Clint Eastwood line from Dirty Harry. I'm always like, "Hey, man, I appreciate the feedback, but your mouthwash ain't cutting it." And then I've used that one before. Anyway, sorry.
Yeah. I mean,
you say thanks for sharing. You're just, you know, it's like, "Thanks. Thanks for that."
What about you, Jeremy? You look like you were ready to say something there.
I mean, we're after the gig and you're telling me something about, you know, I mean, I had a guy come up to, you know, I have this band Mophone. Mophone is a trio. It's two saxophones and drums. That's the whole band. No bass, no guitar, no keys.
and we play kind of funky, jazzy, a lot of New Orleans stuff. Here, Chip, you can, if you don't mind, put the link in. It's mofone.net.
Sure, absolutely.
Thank you, mofone.net. And you know, we've had great success, and it's an oddball band to have that weird instrumentation, right? Baritone sax, alto sax, and I understand it's not for everyone, but yet we've had great success. We've played at Monterey Jazz Festival 3 times. We played at San Francisco Jazz Festival 12 times, 4 albums. And we had a guy come up to us after a gig, up to me, and was like, "Oh, you know, it's a really interesting, really interesting concept you guys have there. But I think it, you know, you'd be better served if you explored, you know, really doing blah 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 with the compositions instead of, you know, just blah 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 what you're doing." And I'm like, "Fuck you."
Did you say fuck you?
I did. Yeah, I was like, no, I said, get lost. You know, I was like, you know, I don't know. You can tell when people, he was drunk too, when people mean you well and when they don't mean you well.
Yes. You know what? Thank you for saying that, because they're all, yes. There's always, as Todd Zuckerman calls him, the Coors Light guy. The guy that's standing over there watching you going, "All right, what do you got?"
Yeah, right.
Drinking his beer, you know. And you know, there's always going to be that person.
Yeah.
There's always, and I think a lot of times when that happens, I think we've all been around the block enough to realize that that's pure envy and or insecurity talking.
Right.
I mean, right. You know, I mean, always. Yeah.
Right.
So right. I think if you personally get feedback like that, you know, huge grains of salt, gigantic amounts of active restraint to not say fuck you. Right. Because it, you know, yeah, you want to sometimes, you know, I mean, you really do. But, and it does, and that does happen. That does happen, you know. I think feedback can be, feedback is warranted by other musicians if you really respect them and you ask their opinion. Ask it, it's very warranted.
Yeah, I agree. So here's a good one. And here's where I realized that I was out of line giving feedback. So I used to work with this
giving
lawyer.
Feedback, giving feedback.
Yep.
Okay.
I was working with this for years with this lawyer band, and they hired me to be their musical director and their drummer. And it was kind of a novelty band. They would play at these lawyer partner retreats and stuff and rewrite the words to popular songs to be about lawyer stuff, you know? So it was like BlackBerry ringing in the dead of night kind of thing, you know? And so I would coach these guys, and they're amateur musicians, and we'd play these gigs, and you know, not public gigs, but for lawyers and stuff at their things. And I was used to, you know, telling the sound guy what's what, you know, like what to do. And you know, the guitar needs to come up a little bit, you know, whatever. And there was one time that they hired this really high-end sound guy who had worked with Prince, among other people. And I went and told him something about, and I didn't know this at the time, like who, you know, where, who he was, what his caliber, whatever pedigree was. And I told him something about, you know, the mix. And he said, "Thanks, you know, let me do my job and you worry about your job." And I was like, "Oh." And then I realized, you know, this is a guy who knows his stuff, and he knows his stuff so much better than I know that stuff. And so he was taking my feedback as, you know, kind of insulting, you know, like, you know, I'm a professional and you were, you know, and I apologized afterwards. Like, "Hey man, sorry about that. You know, you're totally on top of it." But, yeah, you know, it was, it wasn't like I was trying to tell him how to do his job. I was just more thinking like, this is what I'm hearing and this is what I think should happen. It wasn't like I was giving him feedback about him per se, but you know, anyways, it was a good lesson.
Well, think about dealing with feedback. How many people deal with feedback more than sound men, you know?
Yeah, right, right.
Yeah.
Right. Right. Literally and figuratively, like God.
Literally and figuratively, yeah. Absolutely. I mean,
it's there have been times, I'll tell you this, where I've been at shows and the sound is god awful.
Oh yeah.
I'm not talking about my shows. I'm talking about shows I go to.
A show, and, yes, yeah. Yes.
And sometimes you get a good sound person, sometimes you don't get a good sound person. And I will never go up to the sound person and tell them what to do. Or what, you know, that it sounds bad or that the bass is too loud or any of those things. It's like, hey, would I want someone come up to me in my place of work and tell some stranger telling me about my business, what I'm doing?
Right.
You know?
I'm always nice to the sound man, just like I'm always nice at the drive-through. I'm just always nice.
Always nice at the – that's very true, man. That's very true. I had a situation – this is a question – to both of you guys, at the end of a story. I played with this band years ago through Paramount Pictures, and we backed up all the Star Trek actors. And we played Star Trek conventions all over the place. All the actors sing or dance or do something. During the convention, we played really eclectic science fiction songs. And then the highlight of the show was one of two things. We would either walk the actors on and off stage, and you know, they would do their song and dance or their speech to the audience, or we would back up this one actor by the name of Tim Russ. Tim was was on Star Trek Voyager. He played Tuvok. He's an incredible singer songwriter. Had a couple albums out. One of the actors that was on one of the shows was, much like you said, Jeremy, about the lawyers who would write lyrics about, you know, they would take famous songs and they would write funny lyrics about lawsuits or what have you. Well, what this particular actor did was he took all of the, he took very famous songs and he rewrote the lyrics about how he was done wrong by Star Trek and Paramount and the franchise and how he was just taken advantage of with his talents. And he was very full of his fame. And at rehearsals, he wouldn't address me. He would address the band leader. Like, literally, I'm right here, and we're rehearsing, and he would go to the band leader, and he would say, could you tell the drummer not to play the big round drum on the floor so loud, please, because my head's right here. And that happened, right? And this went on and on and on. And I finally was like, hey, Mr. Beep, I'm right here. Talk to me directly. How would you handle, that's not even feedback. That's almost passive aggressiveness or something. I don't know what it is. How would you handle something like that? Because I didn't know how to deal with it. I don't know what I was. I was just blown away by it, that it would go down that way. How would you handle something like that?
I probably would just keep quiet and watch the musical director and laugh to myself. I don't know. I don't know how I would handle that. It's very douchey.
Yeah. Very douchey. It was real douchey. And he was like that with everybody and everything around him.
People are just like that.
Yeah. So the question for me always boils down to, is it worth going through like a little fire with this person to teach them what they're doing is inappropriate?
Yeah.
You know, like, hey man, if you got something that you've got an issue with, you should really talk to me directly. Or, you know, your feedback, you know,
yeah, what's that good question they usually ask? It's always good to ask yourself, number one, does it need to be said?
Right.
Number two, does it need to be said by me? And number three, does it need to be said by me right now?
Yeah.
Yeah, those are great questions to live by. But, you know, a lot of people, that's what I mean. Like, there's some people who just go about, like, they just spout off all the time. And it, sometimes I feel like not speaking up is doing them a disservice by making them think that that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And, but it's always a judgment call based on the situation and the circumstances and the moment and the people. And am I ever going to see this person again? Is this person going to have any impact on my, my playing or my relationships in any way? You know, is this a sound guy we're going to work with again? Is this the person in the band? Is this a stranger? You know, if it's a stranger, I'm like, whatever, you know, don't go away. You know, I don't want to talk to you. But if it's somebody that that there's something to deal with, hey, you know what?
I think that's why I put it out there, was because the situation was a unique situation, and I don't know that any of our listeners would find themselves in that situation. However, to that specific situation, but I do feel that that's a common thing that sometimes where, you know, especially if you're like, for me in that case, I was a hired gun, and so you're treated lesser than sometimes by the powers to be, I guess, if you will. And what I was running into is exactly what you said, Jeremy, because this was a great paying gig. It was the gigs were what they were, but they were great gigs. They're very well attended, and since it was through Paramount, you were treated incredibly well. I mean, you were treated incredibly well. So there was that point where I was just like, I'm going to have to do, like, and I did, like, I think two or three shows with the guy, and it was the whole experience was rather unpleasant, you know, because of that, you know.
Well, James Harrison just said, play the show and take the dough.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what, James, that's exactly what I did. That is exactly what I did. Just, you know, took it, got out of there, and dealt with it, you know. Right. So that's why I proposed the question, because of what you said about, you know, when you run into, and I kind of like you had said, Jeremy, I felt like maybe I was out of line by saying something, but it kept happening over and over and over again. And I was like, dude, I'm right here. You can ask me start quieter, you know, or whatever, you know. I don't know. It's just that was just his one thing. So I don't know.
Part of being a professional is just letting that stuff happen and slide off you, you know, as opposed to making a stink out of it or making a bigger deal and then it becomes a thing. Like someone says something like that, it's not your gig, it's not your band, you're just hired gun, like, whatever. That means you just let it roll off, you finish the gig and you're done and you never deal with it again.
Exactly.
Yeah, one time there was this lady I went and recorded with, and she was a major artist at one point in a specific genre, and she made a comment about the cymbals and was requesting that we do the record with the drums and then put the cymbals on after. and I was listening conversation. I was listening to the conversation in the studio. I had my phones on. I could hear the whole thing, and she kept going and going, and I was just like, I don't think she understands that I can hear her. Yeah,
hilarious.
I don't think she understands.
All right, well, we got to wrap it up, you guys. But speaking of feedback, we'd love to hear from you guys, your other listeners. If there's anything you think we can do better about our show, or something you'd like to see, a person you'd like us to interview, a topic you'd like us to cover, or if you yourself would like to come on the show, let us know. Drop us a line.
Yeah.
And thanks for everybody for listening, being supportive of what we do, and we're here to support you guys. So. Happy New Year, and please check those links in our chat to support Mike Packer and John Mader, who both lost their homes in the fire.
And anybody that happens to see this now or in the future that has dealt with the fire, man, that is just, it's, you know, is so devastating, and we're sorry that you're going through this right now, but, you know, it will get better.
Better times ahead. Stay safe, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Thanks. Peace so out. Oh, I got to play. So I don't even know what I'm going to play. So... Jeremy's gone. Right on. Good job, dude. All right, buddy.
Man, I don't know what happens. It closes when we close, all right? So have a good day, Bart.
You what? What did you say?
I got to go, guys.
Oh, okay. It
closes when we got to go. We got to go.
Later.
All right. Okay. Have a good one. Take care.
See you guys. Bye.